We are in a series this summer, effectively about building our faith. This is teaching number 3, if you're counting at home. Let's do that. Kids, if you would want to go now with your teachers, please do that. Thanks for that interruption there. Perfect. They were so quiet, I thought they'd left, honestly. All right. Little demonstration here to set the tone, to set the question mark in our minds. I'm going to take this piece of paper. Can I have someone come up here really quickly for me? Just anybody? I'm underwhelmed. Okay, anybody? Thank you.
Ray.
I want you to attest that that's just a piece of paper. There's no magic involved here. Thank you. That's a little bit more than I was wanting from you, but stay. I'll let you do this, okay? Now, I want you to cut a hole, like a semicircle, into this piece of paper that you think I won't be able to push this through. So small enough that you think there's no way he's going to get it through. Okay, so cut me a hole, please.
That you won't be able to push the bottom.
That I won't be able to push the bottom of that cup through there. Yeah. It's a trick. It's so true. You'll be dazzled. Okay, that's a little small, but...
And you won't be able to push it through.
Let's just see here. Okay, let's give that a try. Thank you.
Okay.
You may be seated. Thank you.
Don't run with those.
I won't run with those. Okay. So, there's the hole. Pretty small. I mean, that's kind of ridiculous, but I'll give it a shot. Let me ask you, there's going to be some believers and there's going to be some doubters here, but I'm going to tell you right now that I can push this cup here through this hole. Put your hand up if you think that I can do that. Push this cup through this hole. Put your hand up if you think I can do that. Okay? Without ripping the paper. Yeah, that's right. Without ripping the paper. Moki, that was so helpful. Who still has their hands up? Believing that I can push this cup right here through this little hole without ripping the cup. Okay. Without ripping the paper. Put your hand up if you think I cannot push this cup through this hole. Put your hand up if you think I cannot do that. We have a lot of doubters here. Okay. So if you need to stand up where you are, please do that. But I am now going to demonstrate how I can push this cup through this tiny hole. Are you ready? Are you ready? Okay, here we go. I pushed the cup through this tiny hole. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That's why I checked. I didn't think I could get my finger through it when you did it first. I thought, oh, no! I'll be hooped. It would have been a great illustration, but for that tiny little hole. All right. You know, we all doubt until we believe, right? And then we kind of doubt sometimes even then until we believe again. We've talked about this before, actually. How faith and doubt necessarily coexist. Maybe you remember it. I asked... You once, who believed that I had a $20 bill in my pocket? Some of you did and some of you didn't. Then I chose one of you who did believe I had a $20 bill in my pocket, and I pulled that $20 bill out of my pocket, and I gave it to that person who believed. To illustrate this point, simply, that I destroyed his faith in that moment. His belief that I had a $20 bill in my pocket was actually then unnecessary. And all doubt was removed the second he saw the bill in my hand. At that point, he moved from faith to certainty. He saw it. Most of us have faith in God, but we also have our doubts, don't we? Most of us are like the father in that story in the Gospel of Mark. He had a son who, from birth, couldn't speak and had seizures that threw him to the ground. The boy had been in that state for as long as the dad could remember. Like any loving, desperate father, he just simply asked Jesus, could you help? If you could. To which we may remember the story. Jesus says to him, if everything is possible for him who believes. To which the father responded by saying, I do believe. Help me overcome my unbelief. In other words, I believe, and yet I have my doubts. What would Jesus do with that kind of faith? We won't answer that question yet. Or maybe we're like my middle namesake, actually, Thomas. He wasn't around when Jesus appeared to the other 11 after he had risen from the dead. But they told him, we've seen him. We've seen the Lord. But as you may remember, Thomas refused to believe it until he could see the nail marks in Jesus' hands, put his finger where the nails were, put his hands into the side where he had been pierced. A week later, Jesus appeared to them again. This time, Thomas was there, and Jesus spoke directly to Thomas. He said, put your finger here. See my hands? Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe. And Thomas said something incredibly profound, actually, because no one to that point had made such a confession. He said, my Lord and my God. Then Jesus said to him, because you've seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. Which would include who? You and I. Right? We haven't seen and yet we choose to believe. Please notice what does and doesn't happen in these two stories. Jesus doesn't cream them. He doesn't condemn the father or his beloved disciple for their lack of faith. No. Jesus moved towards that very desperate dad and worked with the faith that he had to do what? To heal his son. Jesus took what was there, worked with it to heal. Not a faith without doubt, certainly, because he confesses it, but an honest faith, a growing faith, a faith willing to admit, actually, that it has doubts. Jesus went to Thomas at a time, by the way, and we don't know how he knows this, but at a time when he knew Thomas would be with the others, even though, or maybe because, Thomas was having a hard time believing. Jesus gave Thomas exactly the assurances that he needed to see and touch the wounds of his rabbi, of his friend. Thomas' faith grew as a result of overcoming his doubt. He expressed one of the clearest statements of faith of any of the disciples, that Jesus wasn't just their rabbi and just their friend, that Jesus was God himself, my Lord and my God. Jesus didn't reject these men for their lack of faith. He went to them, worked with what little faith they had, or more than that, and revealed himself in ways that were relevant to them both. I just think that Jesus does the same thing today. I believe that the Spirit of God draws people to Jesus. I believe that Jesus honors those who earnestly seek him. I believe that our loving Father God reveals himself in ways that are actually quite specific and tender and aimed at our personalities and how we might receive it. I believe that God has specifically revealed himself to Allison's Calgary friend, who I emailed you about this week, whose name is Sunita, who, in short, has recently survived a brain tumor that made her infertile. Then, she was pregnant. But at week 34, she had to be induced because of her high blood pressure. Baby Ashwin John Morrison was born prematurely and had blood on his brain. Baby Ash then made gains daily, getting better. All the while, husband Matt received news that he had a section of his bowel with cancerous lesions. That too, however, as Allison reported to us this week, has proven negative for cancer. Sunita is now home with her husband and baby is out of the natal intensive care unit. God has taken and expanded their faith. This is the stuff of miracles. So when we say stuff like, we don't see miracles anymore, it just isn't true. Another example, I believe that God has revealed himself to my friend Larry Farley of the Salvation Army, who you may remember, along with his wife Linda, spoke here, or at least at G.W. Graham last summer. Very sadly, he's dying of a brain tumor, and he is palliative. Yet he is comforted by this long-held passage, this piece, Psalm 116, which is about him, the psalmist, but Larry, calling out to God, finding God faithful to answer, and then being so thankful that God does answer. Even though Larry's tumor is pressing up against a part of his brain that impacts his memory is actually still quite exceptional. He is able then to spend his bedridden days looking back on how good God has been to him for so long. God has taken his faith, Larry's faith, and when you're sitting in bed, nothing else to do, faith is all you have and it's all Larry needs. I believe that God revealed himself specifically to Sylvia Schmidt. Not long ago, we were talking about the 10% chance that our friend would have to survive her pancreatic cancer. Now, she's home and cancer-free. She'd say it's been a combination of lots of things. A successful surgery, fantastic hospital care, essential oils, chemo, radiation, and most of all, prayer. I'd say she's a walking miracle. Her faith is as deep and as wide as it's ever been, and more so. Given these stories, and the stories of that father and Thomas, I would simply encourage us to look in our circumstances for God, to seek him in them, and to pray and to look for ways in which God might reveal himself to you that would actually make sense to you, although he will push you a little bit sometimes. Let me ask you a question. Do we think that the faith of that father and of Thomas in Jesus Christ never waned again? I doubt it. I love these two stories because they leave room in my faith for doubt. They leave room for my anxiousness and my questions. Questions like, and maybe these are some of yours, is God real? Or is he just a hopeful projection of my imagination? Did he make all of this, or did it evolve over so much time? If God is good, why does he allow suffering and pain and evil? If God is listening, and these are the questions we've been covering recently, why doesn't he seem to answer my prayers? If the way of Jesus is so right, why isn't there more evidence in my life to support that? Why do bad people, for instance, seem to prosper just as much as me when I'm making right choices? And so on, right? We don't need to be afraid of these questions and questions like them. And we need not worry if learning new things begins to deconstruct our old ideas or our old beliefs. The answer isn't to deny these questions. The answer isn't to suppress our doubts. And the answer isn't nostalgia or looking back. The answer is to move forward. How do we move forward in faith when we have our doubts? I'm going to ask us to consider three things this morning. The first of them is this. Consider the option. Let's play the what if game. What if there is no God? Right? That's impossible for us to conceive of if we've been following him for such a long time and have expressed our faith. But let's just try to imagine no God. What could that mean? That we're here by a quirk of the cosmos, that the universe is then pretty indifferent to whether we live or die. It would mean, and I'm quoting someone I read quite a bit this week in studying, Michael McHargue. He says it this way. It would mean that we are a bunch of intelligent apes thriving in a very thin layer of air and water, stuck to the surface of a tiny rock that orbits a small star in a perfectly ordered galaxy, one galaxy of billions out there in space. Ooh, don't you feel special and significant? Without God, there'd be no heaven or hell waiting for us when we die. Our entire experience of life would be limited to these years on the planet. There'd be no salvation to speak of. So if we destroy our environment or launch a bunch of nukes and wipe out civilization, oh well, we had our shot. If there's no God and no eternal life and no plan for humanity, then what? Then I guess we make it up for ourselves, don't we? No sin, no eternal consequences. Have at her. What about death? If God doesn't exist, then death, I suppose, is the same state of unconscious peace we experienced before we were born, or we didn't experience because we weren't alive. What if God is real? What could that mean? That a being capable of devising quantum physics, DNA, weather systems, and teenagers is likely able to understand our doubts and work with them. That he would also understand our search for truth, and because he made truth, he might even be kind of proud that we're actually looking for it. That he would plan for us to find him. That part of the journey of our life is to discover God and then plan with him our lives together. If God is watching, then it is likely that it matters how we treat others and how we treat the creation, which means that we aren't here by accident, that we are more than intelligent apes. We are able to care for one another, that we have power to impact this world, that we can honor God by doing good in this world. Finally, if God is real, then there's no reason to fear death, because when we die, we will be reunited with our Creator. I'm just saying, when we doubt, we ought to think it through, because we can chuck this very easily without giving much thought to what else. If we reject Christianity, then what do we replace it with? Atheism? Or preferably, perhaps, customized spirituality? Would we be comfortable being the ultimate arbiters of truth, of standing above all the world religions and going, I like that, picking and choosing the beliefs that kind of make the most sense to us? I mean, sometimes I have a hard time making breakfast choices in a restaurant, right? How would you like your eggs? Scrambled, soft-boiled, hard-boiled, poached, fried, sunny side up, easy over. Like, okay, hold on, Quizmaster. I just want some breakfast here. Do we really want to be choosing the beliefs that we would from different religious perspectives because we think we know it all? And do we think that in making those choices and landing there to replace Christianity, that we won't also then continue to have doubts? How do we move forward in our faith when we have doubts? Second point, believe the science. Firstly, we are wired, it turns out, for belief. There's a massive study at the University of Oxford that suggested that we have an innate bias toward belief that actually spans cultures. And here's a summary of some of that research. Firstly, they found that small children ascribe superhuman abilities to their caregivers, like mom knows where everything is, or dad sees everything. They grow out of this understanding, but they also don't completely leave it behind. Humans are predisposed to accepting purpose-based explanations, like trees produce oxygen so animals can breathe, like we are here for a reason. People across cultures widely believe in some form of afterlife, including people living in the most secularized places of the earth, people believe there's more than this. So it becomes difficult to argue that belief in God is anything but a natural part of the human experience and is one of the traits that actually most separates us from the rest of the animal kingdom. I think we can also reject a popular new atheist, that is, atheists in this new age, characterization of believers. That belief in God, they would say, is quite delusional because of these University of Oxford findings, and for this reason too, that belief in God is so widely held around the world that it simply, clinically, isn't possible for it to be delusional. Not when so many people believe the same thing. There's just no justification to say that billions of people of faith have some kind of mental illness. Believe the science. Faith in God is correlated with better health. People who pray regularly seem to have increased focus, concentration, and memory. Good empathy, lower stress, lower blood pressure, and lower rates of depression. People who join churches that support them report a shift in happiness that is comparable to those that shift from poverty to wealth. Religious people are more generous to charities per capita and as a percentage of their income, making our world a little bit better place to be. People of faith, in general, seem to cope better with stress, manage their anger better, experience greater well-being because they have more hope, are more optimistic then, have greater social supports, and therefore experience less loneliness, have lower rates of drug and alcohol abuse, less delinquency and criminal activity, and greater marital stability and satisfaction. They also seem to live a little bit longer. So science seems to suggest that it's actually pretty normal for people to believe in God, that we are in fact predisposed to this kind of belief, and that people of faith seem to have greater physical, mental, and emotional health in general than those who don't believe in God. So, be encouraged in your faith. It's not as crazy as we might think it is sometimes when we say to ourselves, is this crazy to have this kind of belief? And it looks like having faith in God actually might be good health for us or better health for us. How do we move forward in our faith when we have doubts? Last point. Practice prayer. I know that it's completely counterintuitive to pray to a God who we are doubting, isn't it? But I'm telling you, it's the way to go. More science for you. Andrew Newberg is a neuroscientist who studies the brains of religious people. In his work, please come back to sing though, okay, Moki? In his work, thank you, okay. He scans people's brains as they pray and as they meditate. Here's what he found. If you ask a believer to focus on God in prayer, the part of their brain that is responsible for attention and concentration becomes very active. If you ask an atheist to do the same, those patterns of prayer don't appear because there's nothing for the atheist to focus on. Science tells us that the way humans understand God is more feeling and experience than it is an idea or set of beliefs. For atheists, the pattern of connections across the brain that create this experience, they're just not there. There's no God in their brains. It turns out that some belief in God is vital for people to experience and to know God. In some measurable way, we have to leap before we look. Pray even before we believe that there's someone listening, because we feel like he hasn't listened for a while. And because we tend to relate to God better emotionally than we do rationally, it's important to stay at it. Maybe this is why Jesus told us to persist in prayer, because he knows that staying at it will keep us at it, will keep us connected to him, which will help us with our doubts. Practice. It's like good friends. We need to keep connecting even when we feel the connection is slipping. You need to do things that will keep the friendship alive. Like call them. Don't wait for their call. Make plans with them. Get together. Enjoy each other's company. Make time. Like a partner in marriage. We need to do those things that made us feel in love in the first place. Holding hands. Taking walks. Long conversations into the night. Large, expensive gifts. Large, expensive gifts. I'm moving on. A friendship or marriage isn't an idea or a set of beliefs. It's people putting ideas and beliefs into action in a relationship. Our brains approach God very much the same way. Here's something I found fascinating during my study this week. People consistently report feeling closer to God after as little as 2 weeks of prayer. And here's the thing that struck me. Even if they didn't believe in God at all at the outset. I am indebted to Mike McHargue, who is a scientist, but also has a radio show for much of the science in this morning's teaching, including that last little bit. He was, and he's got a really cool story, and I encourage you to look online. Mike Mick, capital M, small c, argue with an H in front of it. He was a believer, grew up a believer, and then became an atheist. He rejected it all. And to the punishment of a lot of relationships, including his wife and his mother. But he has become a believer again. So he brings this very unique perspective. I'll let him make the last point about praying when we have doubts and why having faith before looking is critical. The most important thing, he says, is to focus on God's love as we pray. Prayer is most powerful and most healthy in the context of a loving God and expansive ideas of letting him push us farther. So reflect on God's great love. Pray for your family, your community, and all of humanity. The more you pray for others, the more your brain will be open to God. Over time, this will not only help God seem real, but it will also help you view the world in a more loving way. It's not a bad 1-2 punch, actually. Closer to God, see the world in a more loving way. So when our faith is waning, when we are troubled by our doubts, and they will come, because they are the flip side of faith, let me encourage you this morning, amongst things we've talked about before, to do these things. Think about the alternative to your faith. Is there something better? Is it going to remove all the doubts that you currently have already about your own faith? Believe the science. We are wired for belief, and it's good for us. And keep praying. Sometimes we have to leap before we look.